Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Dr. Cal Beissner. He is the founder and also the national spokesperson for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of the Earth. And we're going to talk about Trump's energy independence order, which he says is a boon to America and the environment, which is interesting because the liberals would say the exact opposite. Dr. Beissner, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jerry. Grant, good to be back with you.
Sure. Now, first of all, just as an establishing point, as conservatives, we do believe very strongly how the environment is a very important part of life, right? But what we don't agree with is, you know, some of the way the liberals, you know, want to impose all kinds of things in the name of the environment.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. At the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, our belief is that we're called by God to conduct a godly dominion over the earth. In Genesis 1:28, God, having created Adam and Eve, blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and everything that moves on the face of the earth." And so we describe that godly dominion as men and women created by God in His image, working lovingly together to enhance the fruitfulness and the beauty and the safety of the earth to the glory of God and the benefit of our neighbors.
Hmm. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the Trump administration. Let's begin with coal mines.
Well, of course, we need to put this in a little bit of historical context. Coal mining as a major industry in America has declined in employment pretty steadily over a period of nearly 100 years now, as more and more of it has been mechanized and as competing sources of energy, especially for the generation of electricity, have become more competitive with it, especially natural gas. And so the decline in employment in coal mining is by itself not something that we at the Cornwall Alliance would be uptight about, and we certainly recognize that all mining, coal or otherwise, it should be done with real care to make sure that toxic chemicals and so on are not allowed to get into the air or into the water or the ground of the country and harm people. But during the last 8 years, the Obama administration essentially waged a war on coal with the intention of driving coal entirely out of business. And the problem with that is that coal remains a very important source. Over 30% of all of the electricity generated in America comes from coal.
Can you say that statistic again? Because it's so important.
Over 30% of all electricity generated in America comes from coal.
Wow.
And it's a very abundant, affordable, reliable source of energy, and energy in turn is it's indispensable to lifting and keeping whole societies out of poverty. So the Trump administration has a friendlier attitude toward coal. I hope that it's not an attitude that would actually subsidize it or, you know, give it any special advantages. We at the Cornwall Alliance think that all the different energy sources should be on a level playing field, no government favoritism toward any of them. But at least the Trump administration is bringing the war on coal to an end, and this should result in some resumption of employment in coal, and it should result in some slowing or even reversing of the upward trend in electricity prices that has harmed American consumers and also American producers, because energy is an important part of the cost of producing anything.
Sure. Okay, how about Trump and the Paris Climate Agreement?
Yeah, well, President Trump issued an executive order a week ago tomorrow, Tuesday of last week, in which he did not actually set aside the Paris Climate Agreement, but he did essentially set aside the Clean Power Plan that the U.S. EPA under Obama had issued. And that Clean Power Plan was really the primary means by which the United States was going to try to fulfill the intentions that our country basically, through bureaucrats negotiating in Paris, had made under the Paris Climate Agreement. So for Trump to have set aside the Clean Power Plan, essentially means that we're not going to fulfill the intentions that Obama had expressed in signing us into the Paris Climate Agreement. I could wish that President Trump had gone further and either explicitly removed us from the Paris Agreement, since it was only by Obama's executive agreement that we were into it at all, or had said, no, this really wasn't just an executive agreement. This is properly a treaty, and it should therefore have been submitted to the Senate for ratification. Since it wasn't, we never have been party to it. Or Trump might have said, since it wasn't submitted to the Senate, we're not a party to the treaty, but I am submitting it to the Senate now for the Senate to ratify or reject. And I'm quite confident that it would be rejected by the Senate.
Okay, so now you've mentioned the politics of it, but what about the science of the Paris Climate Agreement? Would it be based to say it's kind of like the old Kyoto Agreement? In other words, it's sort of like it assumes that global warming is this major catastrophic problem, and therefore it commits all kinds of resources, I guess, of the wealthier nations to fight global warming. Why don't you tell us?
Yeah, well, about 195 countries from around the world all signed on to the Paris Agreement in one way or another, each of them specifying some things that it intended. There is no legally binding way aspect to this agreement, that it intended to take to control, to reduce, to slow the growth in carbon dioxide emissions, starting in 2030 and going on through the rest of the century. The problem with this is that even if you assume that the alarmists of, for instance, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change are right about how much warming comes from added CO2 in the atmosphere, and even if you can assume that they are right in their analysis of how that CO2 emission relates to economic development and economic growth, well, two things follow. First of all, if all the countries achieved all of their intentions, the total reduction in global average surface temperature of the Earth in the year 2100 would be 0.306 degree Fahrenheit. That's essentially 0.3 of a degree Fahrenheit.
That's crazy.
Barely above the margin of error in measurement, and would have no significant impact on any ecosystems or on human well-being. But the cost of achieving that, even with the UN IPCC's own assumptions about how to do it, would run anywhere from $1 to $2 trillion per year from 2030 to the end of the century. In other words, $70 to $140 trillion combined, which could be far better spent for human health and well-being on such things as purified drinking water, sewage sanitation, food supplements, controlling infectious diseases, medical care, and so on.
Yeah, fighting malaria, et cetera. Yeah, good point. All right, how about a comment about Trump and the EPA regulations? It's my understanding that essentially what Obama did was he didn't necessarily get some of his measures passed through the House and the Senate, so therefore he just had executive orders or whatever, or he essentially ruled through the EPA, and a lot of those regulations are bad for the economy.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, Obama was not able to get legislation through Congress for, say, a cap-and-trade deal on carbon dioxide emissions, and ultimately he just simply gave up on getting Congress to do anything about it, so he used some executive orders and he used new regulations issued by the EPA to try to achieve the same end. One of those regulations, for instance, was the mercury and air toxics rule, which wound up being struck down by the courts as unconstitutional because it violated the federal relationship between the central or federal government and the states, and made some other mistakes as well. Well, as a matter of fact, the EPA has gone well beyond the bounds of enabling legislation from Congress in a number of different issues. One of them was probably also the Clean Power Plan, which the Supreme Court put a stay on last year and probably would have overturned had it actually wound up going to court. It probably won't, since now with the new leadership, the government is not determined to defend that rule. But the EPA has tried to use bureaucratic regulation to force a reduction in CO2 emissions in order to fight global warming, the new administration is committed to not pursuing that route any longer.
Yeah, and I'm sure, by the way, the liberals must be going nuts with this guy, but the EPA administrator under Trump is Scott Pruitt, who has been approved, and he said, and I quote, that we are now, quote, both pro-energy and pro-environment, end quote.
Yeah, that's correct, and I think that's exactly what we ought to be. You know, here's my basic message on this, Jerry. A clean, healthful, beautiful environment is a costly good, and wealthier people can afford more costly goods than poorer people can. And this is why poverty, not affluence, is the greatest threat to the environment. Abundant, affordable, reliable energy is an absolutely indispensable means of raising and keeping whole societies out of poverty. In other words, making them more prosperous. Well, if you deprive people of that abundant, affordable, reliable energy, especially in the form of electricity, which is essentially what the Paris Climate Agreement would do, then you keep them poor for longer, or you actually make them more poor, and that means they can't afford so much the high costs of a clean, healthful, beautiful environment. The worst environmental disasters in history have occurred in the poorest countries of the world and in the socialist countries of the world, where tight government controls on human decisions, human freedom, keep people from becoming wealthier and remove their incentive to take good care of the environment. This is why we find graffiti on public bathroom walls, but not on the bathroom walls at your home. You have an incentive to take care of what belongs to you.
Sure.
So the Trump administration is in favor, and through this executive order is working directly to reduce government control over people's lives while still ensuring that we have clean air, clean water, and clean soil. And it's also working to ensure that they have access to abundant, affordable, reliable energy, i.e., it's going to promote greater prosperity, which will lead to a cleaner, healthier, and more beautiful environment.
And right now, as we're talking with Dr. Cal Beissner, I should point out that even one of those quotes you just said a few moments ago was something you said, and you were quoted in Newsweek magazine. So congratulations on that. We have about 2 minutes left. What else would you like to say about this? And especially I want to ask you in terms of the poor, because I know sometimes some Christians, even evangelicals, have said, hey, look, we're in favor of fighting against climate change because it could negatively impact the poor. Your comment?
Yeah, well, what those folks need to know, and I don't question their intentions whatsoever. I think they have good motivations, good intentions. But what they need to recognize is that poverty is a far greater bundle of risks than anything related to climate change, including such things as sea level rise. You know, if you have income equivalent to about the bottom fifth of Americans, you can thrive in any climate from the Arctic Circle to the Sahara Desert. You can build the kind of houses and commercial and industrial buildings and the like that protect you from extreme weather events like hurricanes and tornadoes and droughts and floods and so on. But if you're extremely poor, you can't thrive in any climate at all. Even the best, you know, tropical paradise you cannot thrive in. And so overcoming poverty should be a far higher priority than trying to control global average surface temperature, which is precisely why Indian Prime Minister Modi made it very, very clear, even before Trump was elected, that India will have nothing to do with the notion of suppressing its CO2 emissions in a way that would prevent its economic development, and therefore it's going to continue to increase its use of coal to provide electricity to lift people out of poverty. China is doing the same thing, by the way, and those two countries together have about a third of the human population.
Wow. And on that note, we'll have to end, but I will refer people to your website for all your great articles and other resources, cornwallalliance.org. Dr. Cal Beissner, thanks so much for being with us on Vocal Point.
Jerry, thank you very much, too, and God bless.
All right, you too. God bless. Bye-bye.